You're listening to That's Life here at the Nahum Segal Network, and I am joined this morning by Alana Beckerman-Frank. She is the executive director and founder of the Jewish Fertility Foundation. She is a native of Atlanta, Georgia. She's lived, studied, and worked in Maryland, in Manhattan, in Israel, and in New Jersey. She is quite vocal about her fertility struggle and her desire to help others. She has 18 years of experience working with nonprofits in both America and in Israel in fundraising, marketing, community outreach, volunteer recruitment, training, and program development. And when I was told about this organization, I candidly can say that I kept it for myself. It was suggested that Alana join Nahum on the air on JM in the AM. I said, I am sorry, I'm hijacking this one. I would like to speak to Alana myself, and I welcome Alana this morning. Alana, good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you so much for your patience this morning, which again seems very Southern, but thank you for your patience, and thank you for what I know is going to be an experience this morning that I don't have enough time for. I already know I don't have enough time with you. So for all the time you're about to give me, I appreciate it. Let's start before we talk about the birth of your foundation.
Sure.
And I will use that metaphor. I'm sure you use it often.
We do,
okay,
yes.
Great. Before we talk about the birth of your foundation, if you would, just tell us a little bit about your personal journey.
Sure. Well, it's all connected. Like any good Jewish child, my mother, told me I can do anything I want to do when I grow up and sent me to day schools and wanted me to get a good education before I found Mr. Right. It took me a while. I did my time in the Upper West Side and finally found my Beshert when I was about 28 years old. And we decided to make Aliyah together after we got married, and we started trying to have a family. I thought, you have sex and you have a family. I thought that just happens. For us, it didn't happen like that. And I was really, really lucky to be living in Israel at the time. I started going to the doctor, honestly, after like 3 months of really, really trying, and it wasn't working. And I had already been married over a year. So the doctors didn't ask me how long I had been trying. They said, how long have you been married?
Mm.
And quickly started me on medication. I had an aunt. I wasn't talking about this with anybody because I thought I was the only one who just couldn't get pregnant right away. And
who talked about it then?
This was about 10 years
right
ago, and Facebook wasn't what it is today. And I just didn't even know I should talk about it.
Mm.
I just, like, it was between me and my husband, and I was going to the doctor. I was doing all the right things. My aunt, who worked in Kupat Holim in Israel, in the insurance company system in Israel, recommended me to a private doctor. And so for many months, I was going at like 8:30 at night, traveling an hour away. We were living in the north of Israel to Haifa, an hour drive. And we were going to his basement because that's what private doctors do.
Wow.
We're American. We were writing checks because we wanted a baby and I wanted it right now. And he was telling us things. He never really checked me. He was telling us things about my husband's sperm that was not accurate. And he was inseminating me. We were doing IUIs, the turkey baster one.
Oh, wow.
And for months and months, we were paying, writing a check. I wasn't getting pregnant. After about 6 months of doing this, both my husband and I were like, something's not right. Again, we had nobody to talk to. We weren't talking about it. We started our fighting because it's
right
really hard. He wants to make me happy. He doesn't know how to make me happy. I just want a baby. I was working in an immigrant youth village doing fundraising in Israel. I mean, it's Israel.
Right.
So they're like, I'm getting fatter because I'm on some hormones. And I've been married almost a year and a half already.
Right.
What's going on?
Right.
Touching my stomach, touching me. Just no boundaries. And I didn't know how to answer because how do I answer?
Right.
What do I say? And this is pretty common now that I know, but I had no words. I was not talking about it with my family in Atlanta, Georgia. My mother, they weren't asking, but
I don't know what they thought. I'm sure. Right.
Natural
curiosity.
And then finally, we said something's just not right, just based on our gut. And we found another doctor. And after 3 months of just going through research, finding the doctor, switching insurance companies, we finally found a doctor who did a test on me that he should have been done a year and a half before.
Oh, boy.
And my tubes are blocked. Like, I actually have a diagnosis.
Wow.
I cannot get pregnant on my own. And it's easy. Well, it's not easy. Not easy at all.
Right.
But you do IVF, and that is the solution to the problem. So within 2 months after that, he typed on his computer, oh, you're eligible for IVF. I did it. I was pregnant twice in 2 years. And I have 2 children from IVF in Israel.
Wow.
That were essentially free because
unbelievable. Because of the Israeli government.
I mean, I paid lots of taxes for these babies, but didn't have to go through anything like I did in America. And that was really, really hard. But truthfully, these past 5 years since we moved back to America, and I knew my family wasn't done, and I did have little kids, and I started talking about all of this, these past 5 years were probably the hardest.
Wow.
Ironically, we've tried to continue doing IVF, not successfully. We even have had extra embryos in Israel. I was traveling back and forth, leaving my babies at home. And then we kind of gave up on ourselves. Mm. I did not want to go through the retrieval process of retrieving eggs again. And we had some other issues that we were dealing with. And by this time, I'm 39 now, and my husband's almost 45. And we said, okay, we're going to adopt. Because that's what people say, just adopt, just adopt.
As if it is that easy.
So we didn't have like a $30,000... you know,
attorney.
Well, I have the attorneys, but I didn't have a slush fund to be able to adopt the newborn that I wanted. So we went through the foster care system. In Georgia, there's about a 3-year waiting list for a baby. My husband really wanted older kids. I wasn't prepared. We weren't prepared necessarily. And he wanted sibling groups.
Wow.
Huge fighting between us. And I learned about myself after about a year and a half of going through foster care training. I just didn't have what it takes. I'm not that special person to take a sibling group that's older than my now 7-year-old and 5-year-old. And it was just one day I remember going to his office just crying, like, I just want a baby. And I mean, it's still emotional because I'm still going through it. But it's been a huge tension between us because financially we just couldn't make it work. In Atlanta, it's about $23,000 to do IVF.
Wow.
Doesn't guarantee you a baby.
Nothing guarantees you, right? Isn't that the rule?
Crazy. Yeah. Anyway, so kind of just gave up. I was saying, you know, I run this organization, which I'll share in a minute. I'm like, I can find a baby, you know, contacting all the hospitals. I have so many connections now to the OBs here and the fertility clinics and the, you know, the NICUs, sending out everything about myself and my family. Unfortunately, families did not want to give us their babies because we have 2 cute little kids at home, perhaps because we're observant. I don't know the reason. We just couldn't get our hands on a baby. And I got a phone call about a year ago from somebody that I helped 3 years ago, and by helped talk to, who was a single woman in New Jersey who just didn't meet Mr. Right, and she wanted to start a family. And I must have guided her how to create her own. She now has a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and she said she felt so fortunate through this experience that she wanted to donate her embryos. And for several months, I was trying to help her find a match. We were still going through the adoption process, and I didn't feel the need to be pregnant again. I just wanted a baby. And I remember one Shabbat, I think I was reading People magazine, and somebody had done this. And people have been telling me about, you know, why don't you try this? Why don't you, you know, receive a donated embryo, essentially adopting an embryo. And I don't know. So I approached my husband, and he's like, how much is it going to cost? That's for him. I want to fix it, but how much is it going to cost?
Right.
And for us, it was about a $10,000 commitment, which is significantly less than adoption or starting IVF again, or donor egg, or, you know, sperm. So honestly, we did it. It was not an easy process. And now I'm expecting.
Wow.
So it's crazy what medicine and technology and Hashem, it's all
God
connected together.
God puts these people on the planet who just are miracle workers.
It's crazy. Yes.
It is, but miracle workers. And so the Jewish Fertility Foundation was birthed by you. And how many years ago was that?
So when we moved back to America was really the first time. We moved back to America about 5 years ago. And I had literally 2 little babies. And it was the first time I felt comfortable starting to talk about what I went through. And only because I had babies by my side.
Right.
You know, so I remember we were sitting. First, we moved to New Jersey for about a year and a half. And then we moved to Atlanta. And I was sitting in the JCC pool here with several other mommies and babies. And we just started a conversation. How much did your baby cost? How much did your baby cost? $40,000. Oh, I have twins. They were like $60,000. And for me, I was like, well, I remember I wanted a private hospital and I'm an American. being in Israel. I think I paid like $200 total for two kids and storing my embryos, my extra embryos, maybe $200. And my background, as you mentioned, has always been a nonprofit. I've always been working for awesome causes, but never really my own cause. And immediately I just said, oh my God, there's something there. People in America are just not able to even afford the whole process of doing fertility treatment significantly. IVF is just expensive. They're not getting the support they need. And the community as a whole, whether it's the rabbis, mikveh attendants, doctors, don't understand how they can help the Jewish community go through the process. So I just started talking to anybody who would listen. This was in 2015. And from that point, we're in 2019 now, we've been really lucky that the organization came together so quickly.
And clearly filling a need. And I'm noticing that not only, I mean, you adorably brought me a car magnet, which is great, for the Jewish Fertility Foundation Building Families, but I had already noticed it on the back of a car, and I had already noticed all of the material that's available in the Young Israel of Toco Hills that is just readily out there in terms of stories and personal anecdotes that have been put into a book about women who are struggling to get pregnant and what that feels like, and their in their efforts to build this community and allow women and husbands as well to talk about that and to find that kinship, probably, you know, gains that, provides that infrastructure that is, as you mentioned, almost like the first step. Before we start talking about money, let's just start talking. And so I'm already sensing, and when we came down, before we came down here in preparation for these shows, for this entire week, it was Rabbi Starr who said, you must get Alana on the air. You must hear what they're doing. So it's already very clear that in Atlanta, this conversation, I don't want to say is prevalent, but it is not something that's happening behind closed doors. You have made it a conversation that can happen out in the open, and that's incredible.
Thank you. No, I think that a lot of people say, oh, you lucked out being in Atlanta and starting this organization. We did luck out. I thought that the first thing I wanted to do was only give out money to people who needed it. And we quickly understood, well, it's not just about the money. It's also about receiving the emotional support. But I think that one of the first areas, I guess, in 2015 that we really tackled was the rabbinic community, what were mikveh attendants, and just beginning to open up the conversations that we can talk about this. Women and men can talk about this. It's a safe space, and empowering the clergy really to, I mean, they're already trained on how to work with people and help people.
Right, the pastoral.
This is just the pastoral care. So this is just a little bit extra training on infertility sensitivity and then what to do if a couple or an individual comes to you. So that's Rabbi Starr was one of our founding rabbis who worked with us to help create some of the protocols in the very beginning. And we're so appreciative. We honored him last year at a gala event with 450 people.
Wow.
Where we raised a significant amount of funds. But what we learned is it's just not only about the money. We've given out $100,000 in grants over the past year and a half.
And grants range between?
Generally, they range between $5,000 and $10,000. But we've negotiated deals and contracts with each of the clinics here in Atlanta, and they're discounting the rates for our grantees.
Wow.
In addition, we partner with the Jewish Interest Free Loan Association of Atlanta, and they give our grantees up to $5,000 interest free loans, because we're talking about over $20,000.
Right.
So if we give 10, our clinics can give up to 5, and then our interest free loan can give up to 5, and we always expect the couple or individual to contribute as well.
To contribute as well. I mean, the you know, on your pamphlet in my hand, it says, "What if paying for fertility treatments wasn't an obstacle to starting a family?" And it's almost inconceivable. And sorry to
literally.
Use right, exactly. But I'm bummed. It has always been an issue. You know, there is always, of course, the joke that the greatest birth control that's available to the Jewish community is yeshiva tuition, right? That's been the joke for many, many years. But even by making that joke, there's an insensitivity, right? Yep. There's an insensitivity that it comes easy for everybody. And just that education of the community, which is something that we have become, and as a member of the Youngest Earl of Woodmere, that we have become more educated about as we've had a number of speakers who have come into the shul who have talked about their stories and setting up that community and starting that conversation, that we realize that that's not a funny joke. Because you can't make that assumption. You can't sit down to a Shabbos meal and assume that everyone is on the same page, that it's been easy for everyone. And so, yes, in terms of building that community where you are as a family, as a couple that has struggled to conceive, being that you're now providing that conversation for your community, engaging the rest of us in saying, this is what we're going through. And you need to know about it because we're all part of the same community. That education of the greater community is probably a major struggle for you as well.
I think so. I think one of the organizations that we love partnering, and we know we're a community-based organization that is expanding outside of Atlanta, but we rely on partners in the field. And there isn't necessarily a field of professionals doing this work yet. It's only starting to grow now. But I'm not sure if you've heard of an organization called Yesh Tikva.
Yes, out of Los Angeles.
Yeah, well, yes. So they basically are providing a lot of educational resources to people in the community to understand better how they can work with couples or individuals who are experiencing infertility. And one of the big ways that they're promoting their work is through an infertility awareness Shabbat,
right
before Pesach.
Yeah, I saw the...
And we are able to kind of utilize that and partner with them to begin to get the word out, again, through shuls and synagogues locally, not only for the Orthodox community, but beyond. And that's helpful for us to give people tools and tips. You know, how can you work better with people who you see who might be struggling?
There is... There are about 40,000 questions I have for you, and Yoni keeps passing me notes and telling me how much time we do not have left, which I knew was going to be the problem. I wonder if we could talk for a second just about you and your husband,
yep.
How you guys are doing now, and how if your husband's story, meaning the similarities, you're finding commonalities between you and other women in terms of your infertility stories or your backgrounds. What about your stories as couples? Are couples who are struggling with infertility all going through those kind of personal struggles as well?
So our therapist would tell us, yes, everybody has their own struggles and it's always different in each relationship. I can tell you about mine. Mine is, I feel like I just had lost and wasted time. Mm. My husband is going to be 45 when we're having our third kid, and he feels like I didn't want to have a newborn at 45. But for me, I'm like, God, you know, we could have had so many more kids in the past 10 years, especially in the past 5 years. And I wish I didn't have a feeling that I needed another child. But that's like for us right now, we're really struggling with that. Even though I'm pregnant, he's going to love this kid and he's going to be happy. But for us, it's just like, God, I wanted this to happen 5 years ago.
Right.
But it literally took me 5 years to be able to figure this out. Other people really struggle around the finances. Mm-hmm. We offer a fertility buddies program where we match up veterans of infertility with people going through it now. We have like 80 people in the program now. And I used to feel like... it's primarily women. We have like 3 or 4 veteran men who are ready to talk about their emotions and who are like ready to go.
God bless. Yeah.
Sometimes using sarcasm, sometimes more serious. My husband would have never participated in a program like that. He really, his whole thing was like, how am I going to make my wife happy? How am I going to pay for it? And other, you know, people are different. But I used to highly encourage our grantees on both sides, the men and the women, to be matched up with the buddy. And I could just see the struggle for the men. We're giving them $10,000, you know, or whatever the grant is. How can, and then they're like, okay, match me up with a buddy. And I could see it wasn't for everybody. The women always accepted the help.
Right.
But the men just like were not always into it. And so I stopped forcing them because I didn't want to add another burden. But moral of the story is, your marriage is going to, you know, it's going to be hard, and hopefully you'll go to the right therapist. We'll provide, you know, the right emotional support and financial support and medical assistance for you, but it's hard.
It's hard. JewishFertilityFoundation.org is where you can get more information. JewishFertilityFoundation.org. I mean, the amount of work that you're doing, and in such a short time, I mean, you are literally growing the Jewish community. I think that that just has to be highlighted. That has to, this is a literally a people's effort. It is, we are responsible for each other, but it's one of the reasons that that IVF in Israel is of such a low cost, because building the nation,
that might be our next project.
Is
I can't talk about it yet.
Okay.
But perhaps we're partnering with several hospitals in Israel right now.
Wow. Incredible. I can only
think
imagine
about where our $10,000 could go.
I can imagine where your $10,000 can go. I certainly can imagine that, and that's pretty remarkable, and how much further it can go in Shkolim. All right. Well, we'll talk about that when you are ready to talk about that. But Alana, your story is incredible and your efforts are incredible. And JewishFertilityFoundation.org. They can get more information by going there. They can email you.
They can email me. And actually now we're opening our grant up beyond Atlanta.
I was going to ask you
if you're going to use our clinics
right
in Atlanta, which many Southern communities do come up to Atlanta to use, you are eligible for the grant. But I have a New York couple I'm working with right now where honestly it's just financially more accessible to come down to Atlanta.
Wow.
If they're able to be eligible for
don't pass
grant
me another note, Yoni. Don't pass me another note. Yeah, I will. I'm gonna finish. Okay, so before he starts sending me darts, you're the next, or the next state that you're looking at pairing with or expanding to?
This 2019 is our exploration. We
got
just
it.
Got a big grant in order for me to finally hire at potentially a number two.
Got it.
And
take
we're
maternity
exploring.
Leave, please God.
Please God.
Right.
So it's we're exploring.
Okay. All right. Well, continued hatzlacha to you, and you should continue to feel good. I hope you're feeling good. I offered you a donut. You didn't even want a donut. You're the first pregnant woman who doesn't want a donut. No, I'm just kidding. JewishFertilityFoundation.org. Again, if you have questions, you can certainly email Alana, alana@JewishFertilityFoundation.org. You can reach them at 770-843-7413, but also check them out on social media. This is one of the times where I say that social media is a great thing. I know it can be used for evil. Trust me, I get it. But in this way, Facebook is a great thing. Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. Jewish Fertility Foundation on Facebook, @JewishFertility for Twitter, and Jewish Fertility Foundation on Instagram. Jewish Fertility Foundation Atlanta. Alana, you are really miraculous.
Thank you.
You are heroic.
And a big shout out to my New York fans, my family.
Oh, all right. Way to go, New York. Yes.
Woo.
Way to go, New York. We're going to have to talk about Atlanta more. But Yoni, all right, Yoni, I get it. Anyway, Alana, thank you again. And thank you for being patient. And thank you so much for your time and for your story. More information, www.JewishFertilityFoundation.org. You've been listening to That's Life here at the Nachum Segal Network, coming to you from Atlanta. The afternoon continues with a full day of programming. The Live Lunch, hosted by Nachum Segal, begins in just a few moments. Hear more about the Kosher Halftime Show and more behind-the-scene antics. Frankly, you won't believe what we are telling you, but it's all true. Throwback Thursday starts at 1 p.m. and Encore of JM Rewind is at 4 p.m. And of course, the Erev Shabbos Show, hosted by Mark Zomick, begins at 7 p.m., brought to you by our friends at Kedem. Tomorrow morning, join Nachum as he hosts JM & AM from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And at the conclusion of JM & AM, join Naomi for an encore of Table for Two. Again, Naomi's show that was supposed to be recorded this week at the Spicy Peach will be rescheduled, I think, for February 20th, give or take. Stay tuned for that or watch our updates in terms of that. But of course, Naomi on tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Avrami hosts Saturday Night Segal this Motzei Shabbat starting at 9 p.m. Matas hosts JM Sunday starting at 7 a.m. Eastern Time. And we do not have time for a song. We are out. I am done. That's life, everybody. Bye, guys.